Thanks, everyone, for coming. I'm going to read a newish story. It takes place in Pittsburgh on a really, really hot August day. We'll try to remember that. And it's called Processional. Sure. The groom on this too warm Pittsburgh afternoon tells us how much he admires his parents, especially the fact that for 32 years they have made their bed together, never a day missed. I want nothing more for my new life with this beautiful woman, he tells us. It seems a lowly ambition for someone entering the holy bonds of matrimony for the first time. The bride, we know, wants more. She's hoping for much, much more. A coal barge chugs down the Monongahela River, heading towards the confluence of the three rivers that define our city. The barges navigating our waterways are slow-moving crafts that reach speeds of 8 miles an hour when there are no winds, and there are always winds. They look like lazy vessels, as if the captain and crew have fallen asleep and are drifting downriver like an unmanned raft on a summer afternoon. We are friends of the bride and know that she is an ambitious woman. No one would call her ruthless, or rather they might, but probably not on her wedding day. Her ducks, except for that one that is way out of whack, have always been in perfect rows. Barges in the 19th century were made entirely of wood. The shipping companies would load them down with tons of coal, knowing that some would wreck during the long river journeys. There was nothing to be done when that happened. The barges would smash up against the bridges and riverbanks, spilling every bit of their cargo. The ones that did make it to their intended destination were broken apart and sold as lumber. We are a Quaker-founded state, and anyone who wants to unite couples can do so, simply by declaring themselves able, the power vested in them. A cousin of the groom is the officiant today. She projects loudly, as if she fears not being heard, though we are only seated a few feet from the wisteria-covered canopy. The flowers look real, but we know they're not. They're silk. We are not comfortable. The sun, the heat, the platitudes of an eager groom who is cute but clueless. There is some guilt, as if this whole thing is our fault. We're not sure what to do, if anything. If the ceremony still included that vital question, should anyone present know of any reason that this couple should not be bound in holy matrimony, speak now or forever hold your peace, might have some direction. It would give us some direction. But without it, we keep quiet, shifting back and forth, side to side, in our uncomfortable rented chairs. But here's the truth. This is a wedding with ulterior motives. River traffic might seem an old-fashioned or outdated means of transportation in the new century. Shipping companies have been moving goods via similar barges for almost two centuries. But even today, it is an extremely economical one, still one of the cheapest ways to move goods from one place to another. You could call this wedding an act of revenge. The bride, our friend, is out to punish someone. We've known her for years. Pittsburgh is a tight community. Friends are made early and kept for life. And we know that she is marrying this nice, very cute guy because she wants to make someone else jealous. And if he won't feel that emotion, she wants Forrest to know that she will no longer be there for him. Forrest Brooks. It's who the bride is in love with, who she has always been in love with. Forrest Brooks is an apt name for an unrequited love story. It is also a name that she has tattooed on her left ankle, and one that doesn't raise suspicions necessarily, whereas having something like David Smith tattooed on your leg might need some explaining. Just recently, she went over to the tattoo shop on the south side and added the words lake and tree under forests. Now it's just an appreciation of nature. Barges don't have engines, no mechanism for propelling them forward. They depend on tugboats that either push or pull them. The bride met the groom on a dating app. We're not sure which profile she used. Maybe woman in love with another man, looking for a man to pretend to be my husband to make other guy jealous. Maybe that's the one she used. We are pretty sure made so more after all these cliched and these unusually long vows that this groom has no idea of the bride's deception. She pretends to like him. She says and does the right thing, at least most of the time. They do have sex. She doesn't elaborate, and we don't ask. Well, we did, just to make sure that she wasn't being a total shrew. She at least sleeps with him, from time to time, is how she put it. We've been out with them, and she isn't mean, or rather, sometimes she is, but he thinks it's part of her charm. I love that sarcastic humor of hers, he says. Well, I shouldn't have to tell you. You're her oldest friends. That we are. Tugboats have small crews, two or three, and if the shipping company is particularly strapped, just one. You often see the barges stopping at strange points along the river. They do this because the captain is catching up on sleep. It's not like they can dock, so they sleep where and when they can. The bride has been crazy about Forrest for as long as we can remember, and we can't really remember when it started. She'll tell you that they dated, but that sounds like a story that she's told herself so often that she might believe it. Forrest is a wanderer, a free spirit. The rest of us graduated from high school, went to college. Those of us who had left Pittsburgh came back. We got jobs, we got married, we started having kids. Not Forrest. He dropped out senior year. Maybe he got a GED. He's always got a full backpack. Things include a paperback of Herman Hesse, a harmonica that we've never heard him play, and a journal that looks like it spent a few summers in the Atlantic. He's lived for a long time in Peru, then Nepal, then Eastern Russia. The one time we went to pick him up at the airport after he had been trekking in Peru, the odor from his body was so rank that we made him get a cab and follow us into the city. He didn't care. I had some strange looks on the plane, he said. Thought it might be me. That's when we knew that he had chosen a different path. He's cleaned up since then. He hasn't stopped the restlessness. He wears leather bracelets collected from different countries on both wrists. They mean something, and we should remember what, but it's something like peace and harmony, happiness and light. He exudes that kind of energy. The bride has been known to follow him out to the airport when he's leaving town. She's chased him through the terminals, begging him not to leave her. She was detained once. It's against the law to go barefoot in the Pittsburgh International Airport. We had to go get her. They had her in a room where two security guards were trying to get her to stop crying. They hadn't charged her with anything, and they were so happy to see us. We don't blame Forrest for being so attractive. We do wish he wouldn't sleep with the bride when he comes to visit. It messes her up, and we're back at square one when he leaves. Without the locks and dams surrounding our city, the Ohio River would be about 18 inches, making it useless for anything, but especially for boat traffic. You could, if you wanted, walk across it, which would lessen the need for all those bridges, but would add nothing to the economic prowess of the city. It has been suggested that we check our attitude. Being so judgmental is unattractive, according to some. We choose to ignore this, at least for now. None of us believe she really cares for the groom. As we have noted, he's cute. But he is not the kind of guy who inspires passion, not the kind of guy who would chase through the airport. You would chase through the airport without your shoes. He's not the kind of guy you'd cling to at security check-in lines, begging on your knees to not get onto that London-bound flight that will take him to countless faraway cities for long periods of time. The river traffic today is heavy. A slug moving tugboat pushes a line of barges down to the point. We stop and count them. Six isn't a record, but it's still an enormous ship making its way to a destination far from our city. We imagine it's going somewhere like New Orleans, somewhere near an ocean, places connected to worlds we don't see often. The tugboat pauses, seeming to sigh as if the weight and the distance is too much to consider right then. Finally, after a long rest, it moves on. A ping. Someone has ignored the pre-ceremony plea to turn off all devices. Ping, ping. We're too curious not to take a look. Is it true? Did she really do it? It's just a joke, isn't it? To answer would be to overstep into rudeness, but it's not like we can just let it go. The phone lifts quickly. Snap, 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 send, send, send. Seconds later, ping, ping, ping. I can't believe it. After all these years, never thought she'd really do something like this. We wait. Nothing more. Maybe he's come to town. Maybe he's here to whisk her away. He's late, but we have a feeling that the bride will forgive his tardiness. We make fun of the bride for loving Forrest. It's just been so many years. We think of it as a weakness on her part, an inability to understand that he doesn't want her back. She agrees. It's just what it is, she says, and shrugs, and doesn't change her desire for him. Just last year, one of the tugboats hit the Liberty Bridge downtown, and all four of the barges broke loose. It was 4:30 in the morning, still dark. The city, unaware of the potential danger of the untethered barges on their own, the Coast Guard managed to secure all but one. That one escaped, careening freely down the Ohio River, caught up in the current. The service ends with a kiss. The groom has to lean that far forward. The bride isn't helping him by moving closer. It's a short kiss. We would clarify it as a peck. Applause, applause, then champagne. The caterers emerge with glasses that shimmer in the too warm sunlight. We take glasses and drink. We know that at most weddings, the first bottles poured are the best. We ask for seconds, not wanting to risk the cheap stuff. We toast to the happy couple. Good luck, good luck, good luck, whatever that means. Here she comes, coming over to talk to her best friends. She wears a mermaid dress, very tight through the hips, with a round train that splays out at her ankles like a tail of a creature that emerged from the sea. We tell her what everyone tells a bride on their wedding day. You look beautiful. She brushes off our praise. She's heard it from everyone there. It's not original, even though in her case it's true. She takes a glass of our champagne and finishes it in two swallows, the good stuff gone down her throat. Her cleavage in that dress is deep and defined, most likely by a contouring brush that makes it look like 3D. She's been wed less than 15 minutes. Any word from Forrest, she asks. Why is it that you can never find a server with a full tray of glasses when you need them? The bride is looking out over the river. We don't see the barges, but we hear the sound of whistles, warning some craft to move out of its way. Do you think he's heard by now, she asks, laser-focused. Not once in all these years. In our defense, we would not have shown her the text had she not asked. It's not like we ruined anything. She never stops thinking about him. She once told us that she burns for him, a fire that never settles, never goes out. So it's not like we were to blame for wrecking the day. She leaves. For some time, we're the only ones who know she's gone. The groom looks over a few times, but it's not like we're going to say anything. There's a lot of drinking, a lot of cheering. Someone has a drone, and they keep taking pictures. We down glass after glass of the cheap stuff. Sure, we'll feel it later, but desperate times call for heavy buzz. The DJ plays One Direction, songs that seem a bit young for this crowd, but they're happy songs, and people get up and dance. They've passed appetizers. The past appetizers are tenderloin sliders, a blue cheese sauce, and a roasted red onion. We finish off several. It's when the maid of honor gets up to deliver her toast that the guests become suspicious. At first, it's a bit of a joke. She's got to be somewhere. They wait. Someone checks the bathroom. They run upstairs into the honeymoon suite. She's nowhere to be found. The groom, frantic, is not looking so cute anymore. We think it's time to go. We don't want to be questioned. The guilt is getting to us, and we will fold under pressure. The air has cooled. We walk the trail to the river's edge, going the long way to the parking lot to avoid running into other departing guests. We are silent, a long day. Headaches, but another kind of ache, too. a secret, something that we never share. But it's been there since the beginning, ever since the bride fell in love with Forrest. Shapes moving down a dark river, traveling to points unknown. We would like to know how it feels. Yes, that's it. We would like to know if it's cold or slippery. Do you worry about falling, making a fool of yourself? How does it feel against your bare skin? You know, the floor, most likely linoleum out at the airport, as you go barreling and rushing after someone you have loved for countless numbers of years. You have never had any limitations, nothing that you wouldn't do to get what you want. That unwavering emotion, paying no attention, not to his rejections or to other people's disapproval, nor to our endless stories where we mocked you mercilessly, not even listening to common sense. Do you even feel the floor as you go flying by? But we don't ask. Instead, we get into our beds, pull up our sheets, and smooth out the wrinkles, all neat and tidy in our worlds. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.